I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, maybe the Trump administration hasn't forgotten about Washington State after all. The DOJ targeting several radical policies in Washington State and elsewhere on the West Coast. Plus, an infamous state lawmaker now faces a public hearing in an ethics probe. And activists are demanding that Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson declare a state of emergency for trans refugees. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. And really right now, it's $3.50 a month because we have a 30% off promo running through May. Go to patreon.com/undivided. That's patreon.com/undivided. Use the promo code USA30. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Maybe all of our whining was finally heard by the Trump administration. It just seems like they are paying attention to every blue state in the nation except Washington, and maybe it's because they feel like we're too far gone. That might be true, although I will deny it and deny it until I can't deny it anymore and still think that it's fixable. But there are a couple of big announcements from the Trump administration that they're specifically looking into some of the radical policies being pushed in Washington State. One of them is on an issue that we've talked about quite a bit, because to me, it's a fundamental human rights and women's rights issue. And it really is in the same category of allowing boys into girls' sports and boys into girls' spaces. And in this case, violent men into women's spaces in our state prison system. In Washington State, we have one women's prison in Purdy, and they started allowing men to self-identify as women and do their time behind lock and key with women. The results were predictable, where women were assaulted. Women, you know, had men, forgive my language, but pleasuring themselves over them, and they couldn't get away. And it's just been all sorts of dangerous, horrible things. And so now the Department of Justice has sent Governor Bob Ferguson a letter saying, we are investigating your practices of putting men in women's prisons. The letter to Bob Ferguson from Harmeet Dhillon with the Department of Justice said, I write to inform you that the United States Department of Justice is commencing an investigation into the Washington Correction Center for Women, operated by the State Department of Corrections. They say this is pursuant to the Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act, and they're going to determine whether WCCW is engaged in a pattern or practice of depriving female prisoners of rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by that act that they mention therein. And I think it's very clear that they are not protecting the rights of women who do, it's not like you lose your rights because you're incarcerated, and they're so concerned about the rights of these transgender men that they will throw the rights and safety of the women right out the window. So Harmeet Dhillon posting on X, the Civil Rights Division just opened this investigation. And this is not the first state, by the way, and that's why we've complained about it in the past, where they're investigating other states. I think it was Maine last time for their practice of incarcerating men with women. And we're like, what about us? And so she said they're adding Washington State. And they're going to investigate states that violate women's privacy and put women in harm's way. And it says the Justice Department will defend the rights of all women. And thank you. And thank you to Harmeet Dhillon, who once again has to be a woman standing up to the absolutely unhinged male leaders in our state who continue to insist that girls and women be put in harm's way. It is such a disgusting thing. It's not political at all. Most people, when you talk to them, will say, yeah, that doesn't sound right. And there was recently, and I think this lawsuit is a big part of why the Department of Justice is now acting in Washington State. Remember, we covered on our show the lawsuit challenging Washington State's policy of housing men in women's prison. It was a lawsuit brought by the America First Policy Institute. And it talked at length about, you know, some of the things that women have endured at the time when this was filed. We spoke to Leanne O'Neill with America First, the attorney who was taking on this case.
If you imagine the things that you might expect once becoming incarcerated, being forced to be housed with someone who is capable of impregnating you is not among them. And that is really squarely the, you know, one of the most important parts of this lawsuit. The claim under the Eighth Amendment It's hard to imagine anything more cruel and unusual than that prospect. Not to mention the threats of sexual assault. I mean, some of the wildest stories you can possibly imagine, at the hands of these males who all they had to do was self-identify as a woman. They filled out a nice little form for their gender-affirming housing preference. And that's really it. That's all there is to it. And so they have the benefit of living where they're most comfortable, rooted in their gender identity. The women, the females, don't have a say in this. They have nowhere to go. They're locked in these spaces. They're sharing intimate spaces, bathrooms, showers with males, all against their own will. And so, really, I've kind of gotten tired of saying I can't, sometimes I can't believe it, that I still can be surprised by some of the things that I learn. But it really is, it seems on a week-to-week basis, there's another story that actually does surprise me.
Yeah, and I think it surprises me that in any sane planet that it would take all of these steps to try to make a change. I mean, the first time a female was assaulted by a male inmate, that should have been it. The very first time, and it never should have happened again. I mean, in a sane world, of course, they would never have thought, yeah, let's allow the men to self-identify as women and put them in the women's prison. But in Washington State, we're not in a sane world. But you would think, even if it's just the liability issue, because now this is not the first lawsuit, even if it's just the liability issue, like you're going to have a man, in a women's prison, what if he gets a woman pregnant? She's going to sue, and rightfully so, for millions and millions of dollars, or if she's raped or whatever it is. But even the liability issue wasn't enough to overcome their adherence to radical gender ideology. So you've got multiple lawsuits. Now you have the Department of Justice stepping in. But here's the thing. Washington State has already made an admission that what it's doing here to women is wrong and dangerous. Here's what I mean by that. So in this lawsuit that America First Policy Institute filed, it brings up a man named Christopher Williams. So Christopher Williams is serving a 28-year sentence for a violent assault. So the lawsuit was brought on behalf of a female inmate who on August 7th, 2025, was violently attacked by male inmate Christopher Williams at the WCCW. For apparently no reason known to that female inmate, Williams approached her silently from behind and struck her on the side of her face with his fist, then grabbed her hair and threw her to the ground before kicking her repeatedly with such force that she sustained visible injuries, including facial bruising, a laceration in her mouth, and swelling to her jaw and eye. And they note that Williams is a 6'4" biologically intact male and convicted child sex offender who was transferred to WCCW after self-identifying as a woman. Now, here's the part where I say the state has already admitted to the error of its ways in this policy. After that lawsuit was filed, we reached out to the Department of Corrections, and all we asked them for was the latest, mugshots, images of the female inmate at the center of that lawsuit and of Christopher Williams. And in the process of crafting that email to them, I just said, hey, can I get the latest images of these two inmates? They're housed at the WCCW. And the Department of Corrections responded and said, well, actually, Christopher Williams isn't at WCCW. And I thought, well, that's weird. And I said, where was he transferred to and why? And here's what they said. This is from Chris Wright with the Washington Department of Corrections. Christopher Williams was transferred out of WCCW in June of 2025 and is currently incarcerated at Stafford Creek Correction Center in Aberdeen. Williams was transferred following the assault for safety and security reasons. So that's an admission. Is that not an admission? So Aberdeen is a male facility. So after Christopher Williams, and I think there was a couple assaults. There was the one we mentioned, but there was one before that, I believe, as well, allegations. So he assaults someone and he's moved. Because they say to a men's prison for safety and security reasons. So that just says it all. You know it's a man because you moved him to a man's prison, and you know that he poses a safety threat to the women in that facility, and he's already shown it. So to me, just on that admission alone, the lawsuits should be successful. And the Department of Justice investigation, that's enough to say, well, you knew you were doing something wrong, and obviously they are, but you violated these women's constitutional rights. Their right against cruel and unusual punishment, equal treatment under the law. So thank God for the Trump administration for coming in and saying, we're not doing this insanity anymore, and we're going to hold you accountable on another front. So the Assistant Attorney General, Brett Shumate, wrote this letter, and it's a follow-up to really a story we've been working on about how Washington State's sanctuary policies have gone way overboard. And I mean, I don't agree with sanctuary policies as it is. Sanctuary policies, as it was sold to the public, was basically, we need illegals to be willing to call 911 without fear that when police come to their door, they'll be like, oh, wait, you're the witness to this crime or the victim to a crime, but you're also illegal, so we're going to snatch you up. I understand that. I do. I think that if you were in this country illegally, there should be some protection in place if you have to report a crime or you're the victim of crime and cooperate in that way. But we don't need the kind of sanctuary policies that we have on the books to be able to achieve that. You could make that very narrow. And in fact, there are already protections if you're a witness in a criminal case for you to remain in the country while that criminal case runs its course, and maybe even forever if you cooperate in a criminal investigation, depending what it is. But you could in Washington State have a very narrow policy where if someone calls 911, police are not allowed to inquire about their immigration status or share information about them with the feds. If they're the victim of a crime, that could be it, and that could solve for that issue. Instead, it's this sweeping thing that not only protects illegals who, you know, yeah, might be the witness or the victim of a crime, but protects illegals who are violent criminals themselves, who rape children, who kill people, who drive on our roads drunk, who commit acts of domestic violence. And so they've really ratcheted this up under the second Trump administration to try to cut out the federal government and federal agents, whether they're with ICE or someone else, entirely from any information sharing. So Assistant Attorney General Brett Shumate wrote this letter to Attorney General Nick Brown. He said, Dear AG Brown, it's come to my attention that Washington State's Department of Licensing is refusing to issue undercover license plates to all Department of Homeland Security components while continuing to issue such plates to state and local law enforcement agencies. This discriminatory policy is not only deeply dangerous as a matter of public safety, but also blatantly unlawful as a matter of constitutional law. It should be immediately withdrawn. Otherwise, the United States intends to seek judicial relief. So they talk about how this policy, they're like, oh, no, we're not given. I mean, that's just so, God, I hate these people sometimes. Not hate. I really dislike their policies. But it's like, oh, we're not going to give DHS an undercover license plate. So now it's very obvious that it's a DHS vehicle, no matter what it is. You know what kind of investigations they work on? I mean, human trafficking, child sex abuse. So they're going to go sit on a house and what? Either they need to bring their personal vehicle, which is unsafe for the agents, or they have to drive a vehicle that says DHS. Federal government, like, that's not going to tip off. I mean, you could have massive drug trafficking investigations. There's a reason why the state of Washington issues the undercover license plates to local police so that they can undertake these investigations without being identified. But you're not going to do that for federal agents, and it'll put their lives at risk. It'll put investigations at risk and lives at risk. And I thought it was very notable that the Assistant Attorney General went on to say this to Nick Brown. As a former United States attorney, because remember, Nick Brown was the U.S. attorney for the Western District of Washington. He was the top federal prosecutor in Seattle before he became the attorney general. And they're pointing that out to him. As a former United States attorney, you should appreciate the dangers posed by this change in policy by the Washington State Department of Licensing. The policy is manifestly unconstitutional and puts our officers at risk. So he goes on to say, please provide me with a written assurance that this policy has in fact been rescinded and all federal law enforcement agents are again able to obtain undercover plates. And he wants that letter no later than May 22nd, which is 2 days from today. So we will have to follow up and see whether the Attorney General's office and the Department of Licensing indeed rescinds that policy. But it's such a good point. Would Nick Brown have been okay with it when he was the Attorney General for the Western District of Washington under Biden? Would he have been okay with federal agents now under his purview and a Democratic president's purview being put in harm's way in that regard? Absolutely not. He never would have allowed it. Never would have allowed it. But he's okay if federal agents under Trump get killed or if their investigations get ruined. And this is kind of in the same vein as another issue we talked about on the show, which is about a month ago, the state of Washington cut off all access to the Department of Licensing database for federal agents, meaning they can't use it to run a plate. They can't use it to run a driver's license. And you think about how dangerous that is if you're a federal agent and you're conducting some sort of investigation with Homeland Security investigations, not even ICE, and you're trying to, you're pulling someone over, you think it's your target, you can't even run their plate, you don't know their background, you don't know if they have a history of assaulting law enforcement officers, of fleeing, whatever it is, you're totally blind. We had on the show not long ago Neil Floyd, who's the top federal prosecutor in Seattle, just a couple days after that policy took effect.
But it's affecting our ability to screen people coming through the border. It's actually up at the port of entry now. They're having difficulty, and it's going to make longer lines. It's going to make it more difficult. The screening process can become more difficult. Not to mention officer safety, because now Homeland Security investigations. I'm not talking about ICE.
Right.
I'm not talking about actual immigration enforcement. I'm talking about Homeland Security investigations that does drug trafficking. They do the child. They're probably the leading, you know, agency on child exploitation cases. They can't run a plate in the state of Washington now. You got a Montana
plate.
Even
at the border?
Even at the border.
So when you're going to Canada or coming back for Memorial Day weekend and it takes a little longer, just know it's because of Washington state sanctuary policies. Now these federal agents just trying to screen people to come through have to jump through all of these hoops rather than just doing a quick scan and sending you on your way. So that's why. So don't get mad at Border Patrol when that happens. But I think it's just so, it's so indicative of this TDS environment we're in, where Bob Ferguson, Nick Brown, the Democrats in power in Washington state, former Governor Jay Inslee, who helped pass the Keep Washington Working Act, they put illegal aliens ahead of everything else, ahead of the safety and security, ahead of the victims of child sex trafficking. Illegal aliens first. And it's really not even about putting illegal aliens first. It's about putting their hate for Donald Trump above everything else. Their hate for Donald Trump comes before wanting to solve child sex crimes, before wanting to stop terror attacks, before wanting to stop human trafficking. That's a sick, sick place to be. I don't care if you don't like Donald Trump. I don't care if you don't like Donald Trump. But that's a mind virus to say, I hate Donald Trump so much, I want kids to continue to be sex trafficked. It's just absolutely disturbing. And will it go away when Trump's out of office? I don't think so. I think the fear-mongering, they always have to have a fear-mongering component to sell their failed policies to all the voters. It's wild. All right, coming up next, some updates on the fraud front. Again, I think Nick Shirley's making investigating fraud cool again, and it's going to have some severe consequences for some individuals who were given millions in state dollars and county dollars during the race and social justice movement of 2020. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, you got one unit, two units, maybe you've got 10 units, and you're like, please, God, help me. It's so hard to be a landlord in Washington state. God might not help you, but the Rental Housing Association of Washington sure will. RHA, you weren't a fan of that, Nicole? You're laughing. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. They're Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. They can help you on an individual basis with screening and forms, keeping up to date with the changing rules and regulations. And they also are advocating on your behalf all year long. They've got two really critical property rights cases going on and weaving their way through the system right now. And then they're down in Olympia, of course, advocating for good housing policy. So, and they have events across the state all the time that are really interesting and informative on housing policy and what's coming down the pipeline next. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. I watched this new show on A&E. It might not be a new show. I don't know. But I watched it for the first time. It's
new
called
to
like,
you.
New to me. It's like Squatters or Squatters Squad or something. And it's this guy who goes around with this crew and they just like get squatters out of people's houses. And a lot of the episodes are in Washington state because they're like, oh, Washington has the most like generous laws for squatters. It's amazing. They like get the owner of the house to let them sign a lease to be a roommate in this property, mm-hmm. like when they can do it. And I think, I'm assuming it's not staged. And this guy goes in and just makes their life a living hell until they agree to leave. It's amazing. Anyway,
I gotta find that one.
I know, it's pretty good. I think it's called Squatters on Annie, or Squatters Squad, or something like that. Anyway, a county review of some questionable contracts around the race and social justice issue might lead to criminal charges. And we've been waiting for this to come down, and it seemed so obvious. So a lot of this happened, not all of it, but a lot of it happened in the summer of 2020. And we knew at the time that this was not going to end up well. They were just throwing money at BIPOC organizations. Oh my gosh, whatever we can do to sort of please you so you don't burn our cities down, right? There was no oversight, no follow through. I'm always reminded of the money that was spent on the street czar, the convicted pimp, to like help gangs and police like come together, and nothing happened with it. So they just quietly closed the contract and nobody ever got in trouble for it. It's just wild. So this came out from, and this all has to do with the Department of Community and Human Services for King County. So King County Councilman Reagan Dunn putting out this press release saying the King County Office of the Ombuds on Tuesday released an independent review of 19 community organizations that were subject to an audit of this particular agency. They identified nearly $700,000 in questionable costs across 16 of the 19 community partners reviewed. So most of them had some sort of questionable costs. And this was all first flagged by Councilman Dunn in 2023 as there being some sort of issue. But further than that, this audit found that waste, fraud, or abuse likely occurred in some cases, and this needs to be forwarded on to law enforcement. Some of the concerns are fraud, forgery, attempted theft of funds. Yeah, the forgery of documents is a really interesting thing, and that's kind of, you know, you forge a document, you're probably trying to hide something, right? So now law enforcement is going to investigate some of this. Reagan Dunn said, this report confirms exactly what I was afraid we'd find when I started calling for an audit all the way back in 2023. These programs can't just be left to operate on their own on the honor system. They need oversight and regular scrutiny to ensure taxpayer dollars actually reach the people they are intended to help. And I will say, I do hope that the feds, if there's any sort of nexus to federal dollars, the federal government needs to get involved, because I think that they will throw the book at people, especially on the race and social justice issues in a way that, you know, a jurisdiction like King County maybe won't. You know, they'll give them sort of a slap on the wrist. But so some of these programs that this involves, the Family Intervention and Restorative Services Program, Liberation and Healing from Systemic Racism. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes the names, you're like, fraudulent, because it's just like, it's made up, right? Yeah, Liberation and Healing from Systemic Racism brings together community members, parents, coaches, and other trusted adults to collectively create the Liberated Village, a community-centered education system that guides Black and Brown scholars to both envision and reach their full potential. Just word soup. Mm-hmm. Restorative Community Pathways. This is one that actually there was a lot of media scrutiny of. One of the only entities in race and social justice that I saw actual investigative work from the press on. Focused away from punishment of perpetrators, recognizing that all individuals deserve healing and restoration. Now the people caught up in this fraud might need restorative community pathways pretty soon. Also a group called Stopping the School to Prison Pipeline. So the forensic review found a lot of things. Question costs, potentially altered documents, conflicts of interest, which seems to be a pretty common thing where someone in charge of money is giving people in their family money, or people they're connected to money, and et cetera, et cetera. Poor financial management. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So I do believe that this will lead to some sort of criminal charges. And I'm shocked, frankly. I never thought that those millions of dollars in contracts given out during the Summer of Love would ever get any scrutiny in a deep blue jurisdiction, because it's embarrassing, right? And you never, oh, it's racist to look into where all this money went. But I don't think it happens without Nick Shirley either. I don't think it happens without this renewed emphasis on fraud and helping the public understand just how rampant it is and just how little oversight there's been into some of these dollars. I mean, we have the city of Seattle. We have Seattle City Council members now calling for fraud investigations into homelessness programs and for the dismantling of homelessness programs that conservatives have been calling for years and years and years. So something has changed in the environment where they're like, either we point out this fraud or like the Trump administration is going to do it. So we might as well do it. Nicole?
Reagan also gives credit to the new executive, which makes sense because the old executive was terrible. So it makes sense that this is not happening until somebody new has
taken
that
spot. I mean, a lot of this fraud happened under Dow Constantine, who then failed up and got this job with Sound Transit, paying him a butt ton of money. And so, yeah, Girmay Zahalai now.
Girmay was perfect.
He was on the King County Council.
Right.
He was part of the people who approved all this money to go out into all of these programs. So, yeah, he's certainly not perfect by any means. But if he wants to become the executive and now say, you know what, we've got to look into these programs and some of this was misspent, by all means, Girmay, by all means. Mm-hmm. All right. Also on the fraud front, this is quite a story. So Tara Simmons is a... I think we have to call her a former felon because I think she got a friend to get her record expunged or something. Formerly incarcerated person. She became the first former prison inmate, I guess, to become elected to the state house in Olympia. And it was really this story of redemption. Not so fast, because now she is facing an ethics probe that is going to include a public hearing. This from the State Standard. While lawmaker stares down ethics charges ahead of rare public hearing, she rejects allegations that she broke state ethics rules in her dealings with two nonprofits, including when she pushed for state funds to go to a group she worked for. So I will say some of this is not surprising to me. I mean, you know, Tara has had a lot of I don't know what you'd call them, questionable acts as a state lawmaker. I mean, down to things like, you know, she's voting to ban semi-automatic rifles or whatever it is and for all these gun control policies. And then she's posting pictures on social media of her firing the exact guns that she wants to ban other people from having. Like, that just doesn't scream honesty to me. It doesn't scream an honest broker to me. So here's some of this gets a little salacious, which I sort of love. But here's a little details on what she's accused of. And we talked about this previously on the show, but now it's really reached full steam. For more than a year, Rep. Tara Simmons has been dogged by allegations she improperly used her power as a lawmaker and cash from her prior campaigns to assist two nonprofit organizations, one of which was her employer. Simmons denies wrongdoing and calls the charges unsubstantiated. But as the case has dragged on, she said her political foes have been wielding the allegation as a cudgel in an ongoing campaign of harassment. She says, even if all the facts were true, which they are not, there is no evidence that I've violated any ethics rules. But the state's legislative ethics board isn't convinced. It concluded last fall that reasonable cause existed that the Democratic lawmaker violated conflict of interest and special privilege laws. So here's what happened. So late, as one example. Late last year at a lunch meeting, Simmons told someone of a man, this has to do with the nonprofit, about a guy who would make a good fit for his staff. He told her the group lacked money to hire him. So Simmons is like, oh, hey, for your nonprofit, here's a good guy who could be on your staff. And the guy says, well, we don't really have any money to hire him. So Simmons said she would make a $10,000 donation from her surplus campaign fund account. The man, unidentified in the report, was then hired in early 2024, okay? But in an American Equity and Justice Group board meeting later that month, members were told that Simmons was involved in a relationship with the man that she encouraged the organization to hire. The nonprofit's board determined this presented a conflict of interest and subsequently returned both of her donations and laid the guy off. So Simmons said to the ethics board, that's not true. This guy's not my boyfriend. So, okay, are you following here? She tells this nonprofit, again, the American Equity and Justice Group that she's part of, hired this guy. They say, we don't have money. Oh, I'll put some funds over for my surplus campaign account. Okay, great. Now we'll hire him. But then the board finds out, no, that's her boyfriend. That's a conflict of interest. She says, he's not my boyfriend. However, there are Facebook posts. So one of the people who complained about this saw a post on Tara Simmons' private Facebook account that seemed to indicate that she was, in fact, in a relationship with this guy. She posted a picture of herself on Facebook with him with the following caption. My sweetie is visiting from Washington, D.C., and I couldn't be more happy. He's had my heart since the moment I met him at a conference in New Orleans. Oh my gosh. She says, he's not my boyfriend. Oh, he's just her sweetie.
Yeah, just a sweetie.
He's had my heart since the moment I met him in New Orleans. Oh my gosh. Not the most genius. Okay. It says the investigation also highlighted issues around $1.35 million in grant funds secured by Simmons in the 2024 budget. The money went to the administrative office of the courts to dole out for an expansion of the American Equity and Justice Group dashboard, which, again, she is a part of. So, yeah, that's the other part of it, is she's funneling state funds to an organization that she's a part of, and then also trying to get that organization to hire her definitely not boyfriend and definitely not with surplus campaign funds. So I think Tara Simmons is in a lot of trouble here. What will happen? What will be the punishment? I don't know. But again, you got the media all of a sudden covering some suspicious behavior involving a Democrat, and I want to see much, much more of that. All right. Apparently, Seattle has a crisis afoot because so many trans people are fleeing here that it needs to be declared a state of emergency. We'll discuss first. Our friend Zach Abraham tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time is having another one of his Know Your Risk live webinars. This one has to do with energy. It's the free Impact of Energy live webinar. Zach is going to explain how every market right now is being driven by energy. He'll discuss the impact energy has on inflation, how that could potentially affect your retirement planning. Plus, he'll do a full reveal, as always, of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Impact of Energy webinar. Still plenty of time to sign up, absolutely free. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. It's happening tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. While you're there, you can also subscribe to Zach's daily podcast, find out how to follow him on YouTube, all that good stuff. knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, activists want Seattle's new socialist mayor to declare a trans refugee emergency. Let's talk about it in Unbelievable. All right, so there's going to be a rally this Saturday. The point of the rally is to demand that Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson declare a state of emergency to help all the trans refugees fleeing here from red states across the nation. So it says on Saturday, this is the press release put out by Mantis, Mutual Aid Network for Trans and Intersex Individuals in Seattle. Mantis. Okay. They are going to have a rally on Saturday along with GEM, the Gender Equity Movement, and the Moto Hooligan Community Support Squad to demand Mayor Wilson declare a civil emergency regarding the current and incoming transgender refugee crisis. They write, as the national political climate intensifies, new legislation and federal actions targeting transgender people have led to tens of thousands of refugees fleeing to Seattle. Like, that's just a made-up number. It's just... show me where you're getting that from. The massive numbers of transgender people fleeing has strained community supports and resources to the extent that significant investment from the city of Seattle is needed to secure long-term viability of these services. Oh my God. So first of all, they're claiming tens of thousands of trans people have fled here. No, didn't happen. But you see what this is about. They want money. They want the city of Seattle to give them money. For Mantis, the Mutual Aid Network for Trans and Intersex Individuals, and GEM, the Gender Equity Movement. We have so many people who need our services that the city of Seattle needs to help us secure long-term viability. They want money. What did we just talk about in the last segment? You know, the last people to demand, oh, we have a crisis of a foot that we need money for, race and social justice, and a bunch of them just committed fraud with it. So, you know, I'd like them to prove that tens of thousands of people, trans people, have fled here. So in any sane environment, the mayor would just take that email, print it. That's a print. Mm-hmm. And then throw it away. But we're not in a sane environment. Recycle it. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Recycle it. We're not in a sane environment. So she's, of course, giving this credence. So she responded to the Seattle LGBTQ Commission, which sent her this. She said, thank you for uplifting the needs of our 2SLGBTQIA plus community members, including those newly arriving to our region. She says, I share your view that a coordinated citywide approach is needed to evaluate immediate needs, fortify critical services, and chart a long-term path forward for us. At this juncture, I believe the most effective next step is to convene a team, alongside the Seattle Office for Civil Rights to work directly with the LGBTQ Commission, the City Council, city agencies, community organizations, and regional partners. The immediate priority of this team will be to evaluate our service and resource capacity. Moreover, this team will develop community-informed responses that center housing, behavioral health, food, transportation, legal navigation, and survivor-centered violence prevention using an intersectional lens. They're about to spend taxpayer money on all of that. First of all, what do they always do? You put together a working group, put together a task force. You already have an LGBTQ commission. I feel like that's literally what they exist for, right? Nope. Now that commission needs a task force, and we're going to evaluate how much money we need to spend giving trans refugees housing, behavioral health, food, transportation, legal navigation, and violence prevention. Of course, using an intersectional lens that acknowledges the lived experience of 2SLGBTQIA+ Black, Indigenous, people of color. I mean, does it surprise anyone? And it reminded me, actually, that we're just days away from the most colorful month of the year, Pride. And so you're going to start to see so much more stuff like this. And it gets crazier by the year. I mean, it gets absolutely crazier. This is the Diane Foster who voters chose to replace Sarah Nelson on the Seattle City Council, like the one sane person who was on the Seattle City Council. It's a whole new acronym. I've never even heard of this. Go ahead.
Colleagues, I'm really excited today to bring forward not one, but two proclamations, both helping us welcome in June as Pride Month, which I'm thrilled and looking forward to. So I'm going to bring forth the first one, which is our general June proclamation for Pride. It's an opportunity for us to celebrate all of our LGBTQIA+ residents and community. One of the things we pride ourselves on is being a welcoming city and being a place where all of our queer residents can feel safe and warm and welcome. I'm so excited to bring forward a second proclamation for Pride Asia. So Pride Asia is a powerful reminder about intersectional identity and gives us an opportunity to celebrate LGBTQ, Asian, and Pacific Islander communities who are creating their own spaces to be seen and protected and celebrated. And Pride Asia gives us an opportunity to ensure that LGBTQIA+ AAPI residents are celebrated.
I'm done with it. I'm totally done with it. LGBTQ+ AAPI. So now it's not enough to have a pride proclamation. Now we're getting into individual pride proclamations for communities of color. Does this not just fit all into a theme this week? On Monday, we talked about these alerts for missing people. And it's not just to have a missing persons alert for anyone who's missing and endangered. No, you got to have an Ebony alert for Black missing people. You've got to have a Native American alert for Native American missing people. And then what were we talking about on the show yesterday that was in that same vein? The UW graduation ceremonies. Yes. Now UW can't just have a graduation ceremony. Has to have a graduation ceremony for Black students, for Native American students, for undocumented students. So now we've got to celebrate Pride, but also AAPI Pride. And then I saw this thing. So I was Googling earlier what that meant. Not that any of us care. It's just sort of funny at this point. I'll use the LGB. The rest, I just don't care about. But I was trying to Google what that meant, and I came across this. LGBTIQCAPGNGFNBA. It's an extended, highly inclusive acronym used by some within the queer community to encompass a diverse range of specific sexual orientations and gender identities. It stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer, questioning, curious, asexual, pansexual, gender non-conforming, gender fluid, male to female, female to male, non-binary, bigender, agender, and aromantic. Aromantic. I thought this said aromatic. Just the ones that smell nice, right? It's all just too much. And it's laughable. And that's when things become laughable. When it goes from being a true civil rights movement, which I think for gay and lesbian people in this country was a real thing that they had to go through. And then it turns into just a laughingstock. And we're going to spend in a city that is in a budget crisis, mark my words, they are going to spend millions of dollars on trans refugees. And it's probably like 10 people. They'll find a way to spend millions of dollars. They'll give them free housing. They'll get free attorneys. They'll get free medical services, free, all from you. Well, people are struggling to pay for the things that they need, who've lived here their whole lives and just flee here from a red state because, oh my gosh, Donald Trump bad. And it's not just Seattle. I mean, down in Portland, they're in a budget crisis. Oregon's in a budget crisis. It's overtaxed, just like us. Portland's getting ready to put together a $1.5 million Pride Plaza. Is that a sloth? Is it a sloth?
It does. Yeah, I believe it's
a gay sloth. That's the mascot for
probably because construction goes slow in the city.
Slow. You have to go real slow to have it cost $1.5 million to make a plaza that's just a cleared out area with a couple trees and then a bunch of pride paint on the ground. Mm-hmm. And it's like, look, I understand that Portland looks horrible right now because there's no businesses, so they're just trying to make it look better. But $1.5 million for a Pride Plaza, stupid. Just stupid. I mean, it's become a laughing stock. It's just ridiculous. All right, I am going to say it. Gavin Newsom is worse than Bob Ferguson. I go back and forth on that all the time, but Gavin Newsom has turned into a complete psychopath. I do not know who he's trying to appeal to, what he's trying to do, but God forbid that man ever ends up as president of the United States. We'll discuss next. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing can help you get on the schedule to get work done to the exterior of your home. You want to get it out of the way before summer's in full swing and you've got people over at your house. And their schedule does start to fill up quite a bit during the summer, but they still have time to get you in for priority scheduling. So they can get a Valentine team out there within 3 weeks to replace your roof, inspect your roof, clean your gutters, clean the exterior of your home, all that good stuff. We use Valentine at our home. We absolutely love them. Meticulous service. They're always on time, very communicative. And I tell you, when you see that red Valentine van in your neighborhood, you know that someone is getting the Valentine experience. So if you'd like to, and one other thing, the cost of everything is going up because of this situation in the Middle East. It hasn't quite hit the roofing industry yet, but they're saying it's going to. So if you call now, you can lock in your price estimate. So 206-ROOFING, 206-ROOFING to schedule your free estimate today. All right, we've got to talk about Gavin Newsom. I would rather have Bob Ferguson as president of the United States than Gavin Newsom.
Ooh.
I know, that's so terrifying. I mean, what a horror scenario if those were the two options.
That is a pretty horror. That could be a horror movie.
But Gavin is, for sure, like, psychotic.
Oh, he is.
He's becoming psychotic. It's mm-hmm. so weird. And I don't know who buys it. Like, I'm not trying to offend used car salesmen, but that is the sort of, you know, phrase. He just slimy and slick. And I don't know who, like, does anybody know anybody who, like, loves Gavin Newsom? It's like, that. How does someone like Gavin Newsom become in the discussions for a contender for president of the United States? Because he's so fake and phony to me. So he went to D.C. and he visited Hakeem Jeffries, and he put this out on X. Thankful to Rep. Jeffries for welcoming me into his office in D.C. for an important conversation about the urgency of protecting our democracy. While the GOP looks out for wealthy oligarchs, they always find their little words they love, mm-hmm. we're putting the needs of working people at the forefront of our fight. First of all, Gavin, you're rich. You're a wealthy, not maybe an oligarch, but you're sure wealthy. And that always gives me the ick. Whenever someone who is filthy rich says, we're fighting for the working people, I don't mind rich people. And I think there are some rich people who understand the importance of the working class. But when it's these politicians, it always gives me the ick. It's like they're trying too hard. But then he's in there and he's talking about the urgency of protecting our democracy, okay? So that's what they're saying. And they've been saying this about Trump all along. He's a threat to our democracy. He's a threat to our democracy. While they do things to tear down our democracy, we've talked about all the examples in Washington State, the law to try to remove duly elected sheriffs from office, the change in administrative code to try to get rid of superintendents who say the wrong things, the lawfare against people like me who are using our free speech in a way that they don't like. It's insane. And Gavin Newsom, he's ratcheting that up. So he was speaking at the Center for American Progress in D.C., and he's talking about, we've got to match the tactics of Donald Trump.
It's just like the issue of redistricting. We could have decided it to write an op-ed. We could have decided, you know, hold hands, have a candlelight vigil, win the argument. these guys are ruthless on the other side. Trump's not screwing around, and nor can we. Yeah, it's uncomfortable fighting fire with fire. Yes, we all want the better angels. Yes, we want the Sorkin sound and music, a little West Wing. I do. But we'll lose our country.
We'll lose our country. We'll lose our country if you become president. But so they're saying Trump is a threat to democracy and our very institutions. So they're saying, let's do the same thing that he's doing. And first of all, not all of these, and I've talked about how I don't particularly love the redistricting wars, but not all of them are created equal. I mean, in some of the red states that are doing it, they had reasons to do it, like the state Supreme Court ruling on not districting and gerrymandering for race-based districts. California literally just said, let's do it because they did it, right? But what does it mean when he says match Trump's tactics? So right now, because it's a crowded race for governor in California, it is a possibility that they just have a jungle primary, right? So it doesn't matter what two people emerge from the primary. It can be two Republicans or two Democrats, and it's looking like it could be two Republicans. So rather than say, oh, well, that's the way, you know, we're not going to attack our democracy like Donald Trump does, he's like, oh, Gavin Newsom said, we have a plan in place to stop that from happening.
We all have agencies. We can shape the future. There's still a lot. Look, I've said this before, so I'll repeat it. I don't anticipate this need to be the case, but there is a like break the glass scenario. And there's many people that have a deep understanding of what it would look like if Democrats were locked out. And we're going to do everything to make sure that doesn't happen.
Does that sound like someone who's trying to protect democracy to you? They want to protect democracy unless Republicans win. I mean, how slimy is that? Break the glass scenario. And the way he says it, there's many people who know exactly what that would look like. Yeah. I mean, you know, you could run a write-in or whatever it is, but a break the glass scenario. And then at the same time, Democrats, very similar tactics to what's happening in Washington State, horrified by this idea that there might, maybe, could be two Republicans that make it out of the jungle primary. They want to change the system entirely in time for 2028.
This month, a new ballot initiative has been filed to repeal the state's top two primary and return it to a party-based primary where voters like you would only vote for candidates in your own registered party.
You don't see that stuff happening in red states. I have no examples of something that profound. And it's the same thing that happens here. You know, when the initiative process stopped working for Democrats, stop being something that they needed to utilize because they had complete control over the House, Senate, and the governor's office and the state Supreme Court. What did they try to do? Well, they started trying to make it more difficult. When it was only conservatives who were using the initiative process, even though it's constitutionally protected, they started to try to chip away at it. It's the opposite of protecting democracy. I mean, you guys know that. And then there is this comment at the same event, the Center for American Progress event, from Hakeem Jeffries, I just wanted to play.
Part of how we as House Democrats view this moment, either MAGA extremists are going to break the country or we're going to break them. And our goal is to break them. We will defeat them. We have to beat them electorally, and then we have to break their spirit because of the extremism that's being unleashed on the American people. That's completely and totally unacceptable.
That's a congressman who's supposed to serve all of the American people. And he wants to break your spirit? Can you imagine ever saying that about your fellow Americans, that you want to break their spirit and still pretending you're the party that wants to protect democracy and protect our American institutions and our American way of life? But for half the country, you want to break their spirit? That's disgusting. It's one of the worst things I've ever heard a member of Congress say. Instead of saying, and you, remember, all this time, right, that they've disliked Trump, and I dislike Trump for a lot of that, they could have been working to improve their own electability, their own ideas, their own party platform, to say, oh my gosh, why did we lose to Trump? We think he's this horrible, awful guy, but clearly Americans disagree. Why is that, and what do we need to do? But they haven't spent a second of the last 10 years trying to improve their own electability. And it's all about either trying to, again, destroy democracy when it doesn't work for them, attack Donald Trump, attack Donald Trump's supporters, and try to break their spirit instead of just doing what I think would be easier work, just making themselves more electable. I don't know, stop calling boys girls. Stop letting them invade women's spaces. Stop allowing an open border. Stop vilifying the police. stop taxing people into poverty, you know, work on some of those things. But no, that's work they don't want to do. All right, I want to get to our daily subscriber show poll. I asked you guys, and I think I know the answer to this, but I wanted to leave open the room that some people had a nuanced position on this issue of men in women's prisons. If a biological male has undergone both top and bottom surgery, should they be allowed to transfer to a women's prison? Nicole, why are you looking at me like that?
Not if they got it in prison.
So if they, but okay, no, that's fine. If they came into prison and they
were already
fully
equipped or not,
they
equipped.
Had gone through top and bottom and they'd lived as a woman, should they be allowed in the women's prison?
Yeah, then I'm fine.
I'm not. No, they're still bigger, stronger. They're still men.
Yeah, although you could say that about a lot of women. At that point, they don't have the parts to assault with. So that's why I'd be okay. But I don't know. I guess I'm just, I don't know why.
I'm
picturing
no.
One person I know that's had that all done.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that person being put in a male prison.
Yeah, and that is true. And I do think that there are some individual cases mm-hmm. where it is, you know, they'd probably be severely at risk right. in the male prison.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's like, just have a third facility. Have some sort of facility if that's really what we need to do.
Or don't
but
commit
it's like
crime.
So few people don't commit crime. 15% of you say yes. 85% of you say no. D. Hamblet says still a man with male DNA. Maria said the same thing you did. Is this before or after entering into prison? If before, I would consider. If after, no. Theodore said no, but there's a padded room in a psych ward that would be perfect for them. Catherine, one must consider the mental instability of a person who is not satisfied with their own biological gender and the fact that they are stronger than women. It really upsets me that my taxpayer money is going to pay for elective surgeries for people who are criminals. Matt says, nope, still has the strength and mentality of a man, but need a special wing as they can't be in gen pop with the men either. Yeah, and I tend to, if it's really someone who's like lived mm-hmm. 20 years of their life as a woman, I agree that they probably cannot be in gen pop with men. I don't think that would be safe. So there is like a little bit of nuance to the situation. Crystal, once a male, always a male. You can change the covering, but you still have the same physical ability as a man. And there are some men that are very weak. You know, there are some men I could right. probably beat up. But I'm not saying all or none. I'm just saying that the current situation's asinine.
You're a black belt.
I am a
you
black
could
belt.
Definitely beat them up.
Thank you. Which I got in the 9th grade. Hiya. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, for those of you who are even at the early stages of thinking about maybe, you know, entering into your retirement life and what does that look like? Are we going to live in Washington? Are we going to live somewhere else? Or if you're, you know, a growing family, a young family, and you just need to move into a different house that suits your needs, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, and he is going to take great care of you. Wes has been a real estate agent in our state for such a long time. He's been through all the market ups and downs. He's so great at what he does. We heard from Lawn, who's an Undivided viewer, who is one of the people who picked up from Washington, decided very quickly one day he was going to move to Arizona, and said he called up Wes of sellwithwes.com, and Wes made some suggestions for what he should do to get top dollar for his home. Lon and his wife were a little hesitant, but they went with Wes's suggestions and it turned out great.
And so we ended up doing pretty much everything everything they said. We did it all. And then all of a sudden, in 5 days, it was 3 offers, all above list price. It was just kind of stunned. So yeah. it was dramatic, unbelievable thing. Because I told Wes when we talked to him, I said, well, we had to eat crow on it. He goes, well, Lon, you followed the process. That's all I ask you to do. You followed it. Well, thank you for pushing us through, pushing us over the edge to make the process work.
Yeah, they were really happy. Got, you know, offers over listing. Were able to get to Arizona. And as you can tell, he looks looks happy and relaxed down there in the sun. So go from sellwithwes.com to soldwithwes. You can peruse some of the recent listings they've been able to sell. And I think the best thing right now is just to get a market analysis from him. Like, hey, Wes, what is it looking like? How long might it take to sell my home? What can I get for it, et cetera? Sellwithwes.com. All right. Comments from the live stream on the DOJ wanting men out of women's prisons in Washington and elsewhere. Chris says, hi, Nicole.
Hello.
Hopefully we get more support from DC than just a threatening letter. I agree. Because there's been a lot of threatening letters. We need some litigation slash cutting of federal funds. Yes. Spinner, not winner. This will spark 20. Is that sexual? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
This will spark 21 new lawsuits against the Trump administration from Nick Brown, since that's all he seems to be able to do. Yeah, even worse than Bob Ferguson. He is just doing nothing else. Doing nothing else.
I haven't heard much of anything from him other than that.
On the DOJ probing our sanctuary policies around the restrictions from the Department of Licensing, Baron of Gray Matter, great to see you, by the way, at our Sunday signature gathering event, said there should be zero protections in place. If you are illegal, you are illegal. The police may save the life of a citizen from a DUI or other criminals. Jonathan Bolander, apparently us Washington State citizens love crazy enough to elect crazy leadership. Mm-hmm. The politicians have driven themselves crazy by their own depraved and corrupt thinking and actions. On the possible criminal charges out of suspected fraud in King County, Greg says, when will we get rid of NGOs? They go and Democrats will never have power again. Let's see, on the Tara Simmons being called out for alleged ethics violations. Mark Leshy says every resident of the 23rd Legislative District needs to share this investigation on Simmons. There is no reason for them to continue sending her back to Olympia. This is something I meant to mention during that segment. Mm-hmm. This was led by the Democrats.
Right.
This is sort of an internal hit job against Tara Simmons.
Oh, interesting.
And, yeah, and it tells you what the Democrats are capable of when they want to execute on something. I mean, like with, you know, down in California, with them getting, God, what is his name even? Now he's totally irrelevant. He'll never have a political career ever again. Eric Swalwell.
Swalwell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I did see, I mean, Jamie Peterson is on the ethics board. So he is one of
interesting.
The
top. It's interesting. That's a public board. Hearing, too. Like, could we go?
Oh.
Mm. I don't know.
Is she going to bring her doggy?
Is she going to bring her doggy? She has like a service dog, allegedly. It's kind of cute, though.
It's an adorable dog.
I would love to bring my dog.
But can you...
on the floor.
I just don't know how you're taking seriously when you show up with a doggy stroller to the legislative floor.
I know. Sorry. Vote differently, vote liberty, says so many wasteful programs, so little regard for tax revenues ripped out of the pockets of regular folk. At least these nonprofit entities don't make political contributions, or do they? Well, a lot of entities make political contributions, mm-hmm. but I don't think that something like these BIPOC nonprofits are making political contributions. I could be wrong. I don't know. John Thomas, ban direct payments for anything but employees' contracts for goods and services. Such contracts limit essential government services. On activists wanting to declare Seattle a trans refugee community emergency thing. James Nice. So they're trying to replace our fleeing millionaires with transgender people. You said trannies, which I don't know if I can say that or what. So which group would benefit the region most? Yeah, the millionaires and the business creators are leaving. But thank God the transgender community is coming. Stupadasso says trans refugee crisis. The jokes write themselves.
Stupadasso.
And it's just it's funny that with a straight like face, they can say, oh, tens of thousands of trans people have fled here. That's just not true.
No.
Very Victoria. The trans community wants Seattle to fund their lifestyle.
They want something.
Yeah. Helloist 209 says, that's my Wi-Fi password, referring to LGBT. LGBTIQCAPGNGFNBA. That would be a very strong. That would be one of those passwords where it would say very strong. That, you know,
it is wild though. Now that's not just that, but it's like that community, like LGBT in that community of ethic. Like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
it's absolutely nutty.
Oh my gosh. This one's funny. Son Miller says on Gavin Newsom, I have distrust of any man who combs his hair straight back.
Good point. Does it is a special people.
I don't know. Some can pull it off.
Some can pull it off, but when you've got as much hair as he does and do that, you're right.
Yes.
Kind of creates a thing.
Good stuff, you guys.
All right. Swarmy dude.
Miranda's trying to type something for me in here.
Wrote this.
On Facebook.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Miranda put in a full list of all of the letters that could be used.
Gosh. Kink is in there?
Kink is in there.
Are
sapiosexual.
Like kink?
Gender quantum. homo romantic. What is homo cis fleeing? Kinetic gender, polygender,
Kinsey fluid.
Yeah, but what is homo romantic? Will you Google homo romantic? Autosexual.
Experiencing romantic attraction to the same gender or similar gender.
Gay.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Homo.
All right, we'll get to our closing. Nicole just yells, homo. What is that?
Well, just, I mean, that's what it means, one gender. So it means exactly what. It's so
random. Cole's like, homo. Somebody's going to clip that and just put it on the internet.
Probably,
okay,
probably.
Great. Thank you.
Anyway, you can get it.
Thank you for that. Anyway, get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, if you'd like to save some money, and my gas this morning was $6.22 a gallon. $6.22 a gallon. And that was like the, because you can pay less for cash. I think the cash price was like $6.19 a gallon.
Wow.
Just insane.
Can
unbelievable.
You go to the Safeway?
I'm not telling people where I go to gas up.
Why?
It was just a Shell station. Because there's people who want to kill me. Now they're going to come kill you. All right. If you're trying to save some money, reach out to our friends at Firstmark Insurance. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Firstmarkinsurance.com. We have so many Undivided viewers and listeners who tell me, Brandy, why did I wait so long? I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I give you good advice. You should really follow it. It doesn't cost you any money to take the Firstmark challenge. I mean, we've had viewers save $12,000 a year before. That was, I think, our highest.
$1,000 a month.
By just calling Firstmark and reevaluating both their business and personal insurance. Mm-hmm. I was like, see, what did I tell
they
you?
Had a lot of insurance.
Well, yeah.
It wasn't
they had
just
two,
their car.
They had two businesses. Their yeah. house.
And a boat and an RV or something.
A boat and three cars.
Yeah.
So not everybody has them. I get it. But I'm just saying. Why'd you have to undercut my story? That's still a lot. $12,000 a year.
Like,
just by taking the Firstmark. I know. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the Firstmark challenge today. Firstmarkinsurance.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Cole just shouts. Homo. What is this? What are you talking about? All right, President Donald Trump has finally weighed in on Spencer Pratt. I kind of wish he wouldn't, but I don't know if it matters because people are already tying Spencer Pratt to Donald Trump, and people know, you know, if they're going to vote for him, they're going to vote for him, whether Trump likes him or not. But according to Trump, you know, Spencer might need Jesus to come back to Earth and count votes in order for him to win.
Do you see yourself in him at all, a former reality TV star?
No, I'd like to see him do well. He's a character. I don't know. I don't know him. I assume he probably supports me. Does he support me?
I think so.
Yeah, I heard he does. I heard he's a big MAGA person. He's doing well. I don't know. You know, if you have a rigged vote out there, that's the problem. The votes are rigged. You have a really rigged vote in California. You have all the mail-in ballots, everything else. Very hard to win because the elections are very dishonest. If we had Jesus Christ come down and count the votes, I would have won California.
Yeah, so Jesus, who's the only one who would have counted them, honestly. If he'd come down and counted them, Trump would have won. So maybe that's what Spencer Pratt needs as well in the L.A. mayoral race. That has been our closing sanity check. One little piece of housekeeping I'm going to remind you today and tomorrow. Monday is Memorial Day, so we will not have a show on Monday. So don't be coming here at noon wondering where we are. I'll remind you again tomorrow. Also, through May, we have our 30% off promo. We only do it once a year. Take advantage of it now, because if you send us an email saying, oh, I missed the promo, I'm going to say, too bad. That does happen. We run it for a whole month, and the next day, somebody's like, I missed the promo. I'm like, you had 30 days. I can't go back in time. Patreon.com/undivided. PATREON.com/undivided. Pop in that promo code USA30. Bam, just like that, 30% off an entire year. That's really all I got for you guys today. Shop our merch store, undividedpod.com. Get yourself a fun little summer tote. Little tote. If they order it today, will we get it in the mail tomorrow?
No.
Oh, okay,
oh,
sorry.
Will we get it in the mail? Yes, tomorrow. But they will not receive it by tomorrow.
By Memorial Day, though. Possibly. Ooh. You get yourself a little tote. It might get there by Memorial Day. I can't make any promises.
I will put it in the mail.
We'll put it in the mail.
I can't guarantee the mail person will deliver it.
Okay.
On time.
So I should just not make promises that I can't
keep. I wouldn't make promises you can't keep.
But there's a 50% chance you could get your fun little tote.
Good.
Put your beach bag stuff in there. It'll be nice. A little towel, some snacks. some wine.
There you go.
That's all I got. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll see you back here tomorrow at noon.